Hello, and welcome to the Thursday, June 15th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown put together a great show for us tonight. We're going to chat with Kevin Krein from UAS during our UAS corner. Then a preview of a new shoe line that Sydney Mitchell of Shoefly was involved with. Then we'll learn about the saxophone showcase and end with Juno Arts and Humanities Council's Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus in for Antonia Gonzalez. A federal judge ruled Wednesday that officials should conduct further environmental reviews of the Dakota Access Pipeline project. The lawsuit was originally filed by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe also joined later. For several months in 2016, tribal members and supporters opposed pipeline construction near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. President Obama ordered the Army Corps of Engineers to review the project in the final weeks of his administration, but President Trump ordered the Corps to speed up approval of the final easement in January. A follow-up hearing on the case is scheduled for next week. The Board of Supervisors in Western Arizona's Mojave County recently sent a letter to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. It calls for an end of a moratorium on uranium mining near the Grand Canyon, but officials with the Havasupai tribe say the ban is crucial. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The 20-year Obama administration freeze on new mining claims covers 1 million acres in northern Arizona. It includes portions of Mojave County, and the board says the ban has hurt the local economy. But the Havasupai who live in the Grand Canyon worry overturning it would cause a rapid increase in uranium production. They say that could result in widespread pollution and negative health effects. Carletta Talusi is a tribal councilwoman.
It's not about economy to us. It's about human life and human survival and to protect the waters of the Colorado River so that all citizens in the state of Arizona can drink clean water, not contaminated water, but clean water.
Mojave County Board Chairman Gary Watson, however, says the uranium moratorium is illegal and has caused billions in lost revenue.
We here in the West depend on our natural resources for a great deal of our economic activity. The uranium deposits in my district are some of the most valuable in the continental United States. It's a great distance away from the Grand Canyon. There's the ability for it to be mined safely.
Another letter sent by the board to Secretary Zinke says some national monument designations in Arizona should be abolished. They call them unconstitutional and say the designations also do damage to the local economy. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Indigenous leaders around the world are asking an international organization to recognize cultural appropriation and create new regulations to protect indigenous traditions and knowledge. The World Intellectual Property Organization brings together government officials, industry, and community leaders to address intellectual property issues. The Intergovernmental Committee on Intellectual Property, Genetic Resources, Traditional Knowledge, and Folklore is meeting this week in Geneva, Switzerland. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation reports the committee has worked on a proposed international law since 2001. It would protect indigenous designs, dances, and traditional medicine. The committee is expected to create recommendations for a meeting in October. The Gila River Indian community is entering into a partnership to conserve more Colorado River water. As Kara Young reports, the goal is to slow dropping water levels at the Lake Mead Reservoir.
The Gila River Indian community has agreed to contribute about 40,000 acre-feet of its water allocation to system conservation efforts. Officials estimate the deal will save about 35% of the Colorado River water typically used by Phoenix residents annually. In return, Phoenix will pay the tribe $2 million. While this deal is 1 year long, the goal is to create a longer-term plan by the end of the year. This is the second time in 2017 that the tribe and the city have entered into a water agreement. In March, Phoenix officials agreed to store several thousand acre-feet of water in the Gila River Indian community's aquifers, restoring flows to the Gila River. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young in Phoenix.
And I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The third National Gathering of American Indian Veterans takes place July 21st through the 23rd in Wheaton, Illinois, with World War II code talkers and native bands and dancers. Information at TricksterGallery.com. Proud to support this program. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour, and you are listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And the weather right now is scattered showers, precipitation 30%, the chance of precipitation 30%. Tonight, lows around 46, chance of precipitation is 70%. And then tomorrow, we're looking at showers, highs near 55, and 90% chance of precipitation. And it looks like we're looking at showers throughout the week and until Sunday, which is partly sunny with a high near 58. So that sounds great. All right. We always kick off our Thursday show with a representative of the University of Alaska Southeast. We call it UAS Corner. And in the studio with us is UAS Outdoor Studies Program, Kevin Krein. And on the phone with us is Outdoor Studies student, Katie McCaffrey. Hey, Katie, are you there?
Hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me all right?
I can. It might be a little difficult because where are you, Katie?
I'm just beneath the first ice fall on the glacier.
Oh, excellent. And you're up there on a personal trip, right?
That's right. It's my day off.
Okay. Yeah, you're a guide. And you're part of the UAS Outdoor Studies Program?
That's right.
Great. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about the UAS Outdoor Studies Program and what you guys have been up to.
Sure. Well, we have we have three different programs. A one-year program that's usually kind of designed for upper division students, or a lot of students come on exchange to do that. And then we have 2 4-year programs, a Bachelor of Liberal Arts in Outdoor and Adventure Studies and an Environmental Studies degree with an emphasis in Outdoor Studies. And all of those programs require students to complete either 1 or 2 major expeditions. And what we're here to talk about, Katie, was just with me on a trip to the Chugach Range to try to climb Marcus Baker, the tallest peak in the Chugach. And we got back a few weeks ago, but we were up on the Knik Glacier for 2 weeks as part of that trip.
Wow. Okay, and so how many people went?
There were 9 students and 2 instructors.
Okay. Katie, what was that like?
Okay. It was a great trip. It didn't go the way we planned. We got stormed in and spent most of the 2 weeks at base camp, but we did get really close to summiting on Mount Good, which is just below the elevation of Marcus Baker. So we got a few good ski days, so I think it was still a total success.
That sounds great. And so, Kevin, you and I were talking before we went on air about the weather, and the cure just showed up yesterday?
Yeah. So as we flew in and had some great weather for a few days, and did some climbing, and actually the skiing was surprisingly good. Powder snow at 10,000 feet in May, but then the weather closed out and we got a little bit of a break and decided that we should try to fly everybody down and break camp. But it took 2 days to get all of the students and instructors out. And in order to do that, we prioritized the people to make sure that anybody who stayed there had adequate food and fuel to stay for a long time if they needed to. But we flew everybody down and then left a tent with the rest of our equipment inside. And I just talked to our pilot, Mike Meekins, who's been flying up there for a really long time. And he had just flown the rest of our equipment down today.
Wow. That sounds great. So, Katie, are you done with the program, or are you still involved with the program?
I'm still involved. I have one more year of school, so I'll be doing my senior capstone this next year, and I'll still be involved as a teacher's assistant.
Oh, excellent. And you're currently employed as a guide with Above and Beyond?
That's right.
Okay. So to you, what does it mean to be involved with an outdoor studies program on the college level?
I think it's given me a lot of opportunities that have gotten me ready for the seasonal job that I have in the summer with ABAC. I think the certificate or the one-year intensive one-year that I did 2 years ago gave me a lot of hard skills, and then this last year working as a teacher's assistant with the program helped me develop my soft skills, which have become really important as a guide with Above and Beyond Alaska, I realized.
Okay. Interesting. Right? Excellent. And Kevin, what do you hope for your students to, you know, it's an amazing adventure. Here they are in Alaska, some Alaskans, some not, but some international students, some national students. But how do you think the outdoor studies program fits into the larger picture as far as the, I don't know, let's say global market?
Yeah, well, I mean, what we've tried to do with the program and kind of our, what makes our program, I think, special is that we really combine these kind of very advanced hard skills courses, Katie mentioned. So students come out of the program with avalanche training and they can rock and ice climb, and they're really solid in those areas. But then there's also a full academic component. And so what we really want students to do is have opportunities to reflect on kind of why they're doing what they're doing, and to think in sophisticated ways about their relationship to the environment and the industries that they work in. And I think that students coming out of the program are definitely prepared to take guiding jobs, but they're also prepared to move into any other field that they want. I mean, it really is a well-rounded liberal arts education, and so our students are, as we look at students coming out of our program that graduated 5 years ago or even, you know, 8 years ago now or so, they're doing a range of different things that we think that our degree prepares students to be self-sufficient, sophisticated thinkers, and give them really strong communication skills.
Wow, that sounds fantastic, and what an amazing experience is. So, Katie, are you from Alaska?
I am. I've been in Juneau for 2 years now, but I am originally from Nome along the Norton Sound.
We didn't catch that. Can you do that one more time?
I'm originally from Nome.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, have a safe trip up on your current trip, and I hope you don't get the weather you experienced.
Great, thank you.
And what are you looking forward to for your last year in the program?
We've talked about doing our senior capstone in South America. We're thinking about doing a ski trip in Argentina, and I think that sounds amazing.
Couldn't agree more with you. That sounds great. All right. Well, we're going to let you guys both go. Katie, thank you so much for taking the time out of your personal trip to give us a buzz. And Kevin, thanks for all you do out the road.
Oh, Joan, thanks a lot. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
was from the same group that performed in the blockbuster Disney movie Frozen called Cantus, and it's called Northern Lights in solidarity with Kevin and Katie's recent trip and what they do out there with the outdoor study program Frozen.
Yeah.
Our next guest is Sydney Mitchell. She is one of the owners of Shoofly. So let's talk a little bit about the store, and then we'll talk about your recent trip. So how long has Shoofly been around?
We have been around 12. This is our 12th year.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And is that your only store?
It is our only store. We, in 2010, we opened a second store in Anchorage. And at the end of 2013, I had a business partner with Shoofly, and we each decided to take a store. So we actually changed our partnership, dissolved it. It was called a reorganization. So she owns the store with her daughter in Anchorage, and I own the store in Juneau, Shoofly.
Excellent. So, excellent. Yeah. Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. Why did you open the store?
Why did I open the store?
Yes.
I love shoes. And I love downtowns. I really, really, really think that downtown shops and restaurants provide a community center that just creates a richness and vibrancy that I value.
Excellent. Yeah. So tell us what you've been up to. So recently you were in Spain.
I was. I was selected as one of two retailers from the United States, and Picolinos offered me basically an all-expenses trip, paid trip to Spain, Alicante, Spain. And I have these, I call them fairy godmother moments, where the universe shifts and suddenly, you know, an opportunity opens up. And so, of course, I was like, yes, I want to go. And then I pulled my passport out, and it had expired 2 weeks previous. And this was on very short timing. So we were, I think, 9 days away from me needing to leave to Spain. So I did a mileage ticket to Seattle and was at the passport agency and got the expedited passport. And then, yeah, I went to Spain for 3 days.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. What is Picolinos?
Picolinos is a brand that we carry at Shoofly, and it's been in our top three sellers for at least the last 5 years. So we here in Juneau and in Southeast and in Alaska, we like this brand. It is a handmade line out of Spain. They own their own tannery, the leathers. It's the kind of thing, if you can get it on someone's foot, it sounds like this. Oh my gosh. Okay. You know, so it's one of those lines that we love because it's sustainable and well-made, lasts a long time, and they're beautiful.
Wow. And who was the other retailer that was picked for this all-expense-paid whirlwind trip to Spain that included a visit to the passport office for you?
Yes. It's a store in Colorado. So there were actually three people from that store. And they are, I think, fourth-generation shoe business people. So they were in their early 30s. And their great-grandfather, I guess, started the store.
Wow, what an honor to go and represent the U.S. And what was your task for your 3 days?
Well, they had been very busy over in Alicante, Spain, producing samples of their designers had created many different designs for women's shoes and for men's shoes. And our job was to review these 400 samples and tell them our top 10 styles for the United States market.
Wow. Just the four of you?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, there were the four of us, and then there was one of their key wholesale reps who sells primarily to department stores like Nordstrom's and Neiman Marcus, et cetera, et cetera. So he was also there. He's from Dallas, Texas.
Mm-hmm. A big buyer with big box stores.
Yeah.
Wow. So any news you want to share about your discoveries of booking and touching and maybe trying on 400 different samples?
Well, the samples are small, so I couldn't try them on. I could stick my hand in them. I could try on the men's.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the thing for me, the biggest thing was I'm already a fan of the shoes. I already love the shoes, the touch, the feel, the styling. So there weren't any big surprises in terms of new styles coming out for spring. There's definitely a trend towards what we call athleisure, which is this combination of tennis shoe meets everyday shoe. Mm. And so that isn't going away. That's something that we in the United States are embracing, and increasingly you're going to see people wearing these sort of hybrid tennis shoe, dress shoe in the work environment, I think. I don't
For
think
both
that's
men
gonna
and
go
women?
Away. Yes. Yes.
I've seen
Very
men
so.
With it, but I haven't really seen it. No, I just had
Come
a little
Come
to
Shoe Fly.
Okay.
We'll show you some.
Okay.
Yeah.
Athleisure.
Athleisure.
Exactly.
Yeah. So for me, the most exciting thing, I think, was to realize I always thought of my team as my team here in Juneau. You know, my great store manager and the people that work with us at Shoe Fly, that was my team. And now I have this global sense of who my team really is. I met people who are so skilled as artisans that they can do work that really, honestly, I don't think I can do. You know, it would take me years of training to be as good as they are. And to understand that when I sell a shoe and our team at Shoe Fly sells a shoe, that is this, what brought that shoe to our store is so deep and such a labor of you know, love and skill and artistry and management. So my team, my idea of my team is just like gone global. And I really feel even a deeper commitment to brands like Piccolino's, where they're doing it right. You know, their commitment to the environment, their commitment to a really quality product that feels good on the foot and is good for you in terms of your, you know, foot health. It's not doing damage or harm is amazing.
That sounds great. So yeah. Juneau is part of the whole global. That's great, that the manifestation of so much love and skill and history as well.
So much. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the Piccolinos that you have in the shop right now. So do you have a favorite shoe from this line in your shop right now?
I do. Actually, we just got a new shipment in, and it's a slip-on black. Sort of looks like an Oxford, but it's a slip-on, so there are no laces.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little flat, and you can sort of dress it up, dress it down. The leathers are just amazing, and I think you can wear it with just about anything. You could wear it with what you have on.
No, okay. No.
So could I.
There we go.
I should be wearing it.
Excellent. And then Shoe Fly is more than just shoes, though.
It is.
What else do you carry?
We carry accessories. We are in this space right now where we're calling ourselves a style playground. And in order to really engage with that, we also are offering select lines of clothing. We've always carried accessories, but we have a deeper commitment to that now. So, you know, tights, leggings, things that go with shoes, hats, that sort of thing, sort of the... having enough pieces in the shop that we can actually put together an entire look for you if you so desired.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. And then what kind of shoes are your favorite types of shoes?
Mm. Well, I love boots. I'm a boot girl. I grew up in Alaska, so sometimes people are shocked to learn I spent time in Alaska, or not Alaska, in Yakutat and Cordova and Ketchikan, as well as Juneau. And, I love boots.
Practical.
Yes.
Practical.
And you know,
lovely.
You know,
exactly. You should see the shoes she's wearing right now. Well, thanks so much for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Sydney Mitchell of Shoe Fly. And check her out. They're downtown right on Seward, right up from the Juneau Drug Company.
Yep.
And
Open every day.
Open every day. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. And thanks for sharing your adventure with us.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a short break. Be right back.
You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
If you don't like going to the dentist, it's probably because it was a bad experience for you as a child. Times have changed. The board-certified pediatric dentist at the New Search Children's Dental Clinic will explain things in a way your child understands and provide fun distractions. Kids will actually want to go to the dentist and want to take care of their teeth throughout their lives. The New Children's Dental Clinic at Search is proud to offer pediatric dental services to all Juno's kids. To make an appointment for your child, call 789-KIDS.
Travel to Sitka this June and join us for the 46th annual Sitka Summer Music Festival. Grammy award-winning cellist Zool Bailey, the Ataka Quartet, soprano Kate Bass, pianist Natasha Peremski and Nava Perlman, and many other talented musicians will delight your senses with 24 concerts and community events. Tickets and full program details are available at sitkamusicfestival.org. Come to Sitka and experience Alaska's premier chamber music festival.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 27 minutes past the hour, and we have special guests in the studio, but I'm going to introduce them in just a little bit. that was terrific. Wow, that was William Todd Hunt and John Moore, visiting artists. Wow, and that was saxophones. That was unbelievably beautiful. Thank you so much.
Sure, sure.
Great. So, tell us why you're here, William. What's going on?
You can call me Todd.
Okay.
So we have a saxophone showcase this weekend on Saturday at 8 o'clock at Northern Light Church. It's something we had been doing every year for 3 years, and we missed last summer just because things got busy and it just didn't happen. So this is actually the fourth almost annual saxophone showcase. And what it does is it showcases the saxophone in a light that we don't normally get to hear it, which is all classical, essentially.
Wow, it sounded astonishing. It was hard to really believe it was saxophone, but
most people are surprised, because we hear it in pop and jazz a lot, and it's a different sound than this is and what you're used to. A saxophone is a very versatile instrument, maybe the most personal instrument because you can make it sound so many different ways.
Yeah, you can masquerade as a woodwind. That's amazing.
Yeah,
So John Moore is in the studio. He's a guest artist. So how did it come about that John came to?
Well, actually, John and my teacher, Lee Patrick, were colleagues from way back when, a few decades ago, and that's how I had first met him. But John played in an orchestra that I conducted in Kentucky last summer, which is one of the reasons I wasn't here and we couldn't do the saxophone showcase. And John was like, "How, you live in Alaska now? I'd love to come visit."
Right.
And then Brand Van Kirk, who a lot of us know as, among other things, the band director out at Thunder Mountain High School, he kept bugging me and saying, "Hey, we're going to do a saxophone showcase again. I want to do some more quartet playing." And one of my old students was going to come back in town, and I found we had like this 2-week window to put all of this stuff together. And so I sent a note to John, and he could make it. And that's how we got here.
Yeah.
Great.
Great.
Yeah. So let's talk about the concert on Saturday. So is it a quartet?
There's a couple of things. So we've got a quartet. Well, actually, three things. We've got a quartet, which is, I don't know, maybe half the program. That's a soprano, an alto, a tenor, and a bari sax. So in a lot of ways, a lot like the dynamic you get with a string quartet, a huge
And let's talk about what kind of saxophones are these.
So you couldn't tell who was playing what, I guess. I was playing the alto sax, and John was playing the tenor.
Okay, great.
So there's sort of the middle voices.
And then two more.
That must be amazing.
There's
more than that.
Well, in the quartet.
The quartet. And then for one piece, we're doing a Bach 6-part Richard Carr, and we're adding two folks from the ensemble that will be the rest of the program. So we've got two students who will be joining the quartet, so we'll have a sextet. And then the rest of the program is a giant 15 or 16-piece saxophone choir that is going to play some pieces that are transcribed for the saxophone choir as well as original compositions.
Right.
So is this unusual?
No.
This is
totally our way of life.
It sounds like an amazing opportunity to hear just the saxophone.
Yeah.
So is this like normal in the music world?
Maybe normal is not the right word. I've been doing summer things for 30 years or whatever. They do happen. They're not that plentiful. And saxophone orchestras, soprano through bass or sopranino through bass, are a lot more common than they used to be. When Sigurd Rascher pioneered the saxophone, he kind of started that idea of playing the big ensembles. And it was very unusual at that time in the 50s and 60s. Actually, saxophone wasn't able to be they didn't teach it in universities until the late 40s. They wouldn't do it because it was associated primarily with jazz, and they didn't want anything to do with it. If you wanted to be involved in saxophone, learn anything, you had to study clarinet and then play saxophone. Then they started introducing into universities. And now saxophone orchestras are not uncommon. There's one in Germany. It's been there for a long time. IU has one now. They were one of the holdouts for it. And I've heard teachers say, they didn't want a saxophone band. But, you put them all together. Actually, Rascher did a recording, and I used to play it for people. We went to Florida State, and I would put this on for other musicians. And I'd ask them what they heard. They would hear flute, oboe, bassoon, strings. They hear all these things, and it's just saxophones.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Maybe I was totally ignorant before. Is the saxophone a woodwind or a brass?
It's a woodwind.
It's a woodwind.
Yeah, well, right. It's a woodwind made of brass. So it's got a mouthpiece that's very similar to a clarinet.
It's a reed. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I teach both of the instruments, and I always say they're nothing alike. But you know, to the layperson looking and trying to figure out what on earth is going on, yeah, they're the mechanics are kind of the same. It's made of brass, and I think it's that combination that gives it its power and its ability to really morph into lots of different sounds, but it's also made it difficult to blend into the orchestra as a whole. This is when Adolf Sachs invented it in around 1840, so it was around for a very long time before anybody was really picking up on it. It
really
was
recognized
made to
it.
Play in orchestras as well as military bands.
Oh.
Actually, he envisioned two different groups, one in C and F and one in E-flat, B-flat. E-flat, B-flat instruments were going to be for the military bands, and C and F were going to be for orchestra. But E-flat, B-flat is the only ones now that they're the common ones now. You do find others, but that's the most common.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was an amazing sound. So if you're just joining us, William Todd Hunt, and visiting artist John Muir from Kentucky is are here in the studio with Jeff and I, and they are here because they're doing a saxophone showcase to Northern Lights.
Northern Lights
on Saturday
at 8 o'clock. Yeah, tickets are $10 at the door.
Okay, and is that the only place people...
We're not selling them. It's a pretty low-key kind of fun thing. There'll be about an hour's worth of music without an intermission. I think it'll be a nice cap on the end of a... what might be a nice summer day.
Sounds great. Okay, so one more, please.
All right.
Please, please, please.
Yeah, and these pieces we're playing are Telemann flute duets.
Oh, wow.
So we just grabbed.
It was an amazing sound.
Almanac for Thursday. It's the 15th of June, 2017. It's the birthday of Lisa del Giocondo, born in Florence, Italy, 1479. When she was 15, she married a wealthy silk merchant named Francesco. They seem to have had a happy marriage, and in about 1503, Francesco commissioned a local artist, Leonardo da Vinci, to paint his wife's portrait, which Leonardo took on. He was between commissions at the time. He chose a rather large canvas for this portrait, and he also made a decision to paint her close up, which was rather revolutionary for the time. He was working on the portrait of Lisa del Giocondo when he got a very lucrative commission to paint the Battle of Anghiari with Michelangelo for the Palazzo Vecchio. So he set aside the portrait of her. He left Florence, never delivered it to Francesco and Lisa, took it off, finished the portrait, and it wound up in the hands of the French king Francis I. The portrait, of course, was the Mona Lisa, which 6 million people every year look at in the Louvre in Paris. Much of this information was uncovered by a journalist, Diane Hales, who found out all she could about the mysterious Lisa and wrote a book about it, Mona Lisa, A Life Discovered, came out a few years ago. Lisa del Giocondo died in 1532. She was 53 years old. It was on this day in 1934 the Great Smoky Mountains National Park was founded in Tennessee and North Carolina, the most visited national park in the country. About 10 million people come through every year. And it's the birthday of the Japanese poet Kobayashi Issa, born in Kashiwabara, Japan, 1763, one of the masters of the haiku. He wrote more than 20,000 of them in his lifetime as he traveled around Japan, keeping a travel diary, visiting shrines and temples across the country. Here's a poem for today by Marge Piercy, The Scent of Apple Cake. My mother cooked as drudgery the same 15 dishes round and round like a donkey bound to a millstone grinding dust. My mother baked as a dance, the flour falling from the sifter in a rain of fine white pollen, the sugar was sweet snow, the dough beneath her palms was the warm flesh of a baby when they were all hers before their wills sprouted like mushrooms. Cookies she formed in rows on the baking sheets, oatmeal, molasses, lemon, chocolate chip, delights anyone could love. Love was in short supply, but pies were obedient to her command of their pastry, crisp, holding the sweetness within. Desserts were her reward for endless cleaning in the acid yellow cloud of Detroit, begging dollars from my father, mending, darning, bleaching. In the oven she made sweetness where otherwise there was none. The Scent of Apple Cake by Marge Piercy from her collection Made in Detroit, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Magoosh, online test prep for the ACT, SAT, GMAT, GRE, LSAT, and MCAT. Prep smart, go far, and enjoy the ride at magoosh.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Are you one of the 120,000 Alaskans with some college but no degree? The Finnish College Alaska Initiative from the University of Alaska Southeast can help you complete your degree with flexible online learning options, a personalized degree plan, and support on how to fit college into your life. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver to eligible applicants. You already work hard. Get rewarded for it. Let's finish that degree together. Call 888-550-6177 or visit finishcollege.alaska.edu to learn more.
It is 16 minutes to the hour. It is June 15th. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is a producer and engineer, and he put together a great show. We had a chat with somebody who was on a glacier. Then we got serenaded by saxophones. It was just unbelievable. Learned about a new shoe line and our own shoe fly owner going off to Spain to weigh in on new shoe line, which sounds great. And then we end with Arts Up with Megan Chambers from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and a visiting artist who is here to talk about what's going on this weekend, which is Paint Big, Really Big. We have Cynthia Schildhauer from Chico, California in the studio with us with Megan. So we're going to start with Cynthia, and then you're going to tell us everything else that's going on. Right. So
Welcome to Juno.
Thank you. Thrilled.
And welcome to the show. So tell us a little bit about this Paint Big, Really Big.
Well, it's fun. It's a three-day class I kind of created several years ago, and it's this Friday, this Saturday, and Sunday. And Friday night, we're going to get started around 5, and then Saturday, and we just, it's kind of like an introduction Friday and a little bit of work. Saturday, we get together, and there's a lot of, there's several projects that use mixed media, and my intention is to help people get some content for their big painting, which is going to be on Sunday. And the content that I'm trying to inspire people to discover is stuff that's already in there, if that makes any sense at all. I have ways to excavate art. Not, and actually symbols and intuitive kinds of language that you can symbolize in painting. Ooh. It's hard, I'm finding it's kind of a little hard to describe, but it's fun. It's a very intuitive sense, but there's also a technique.
Wow. And so when you say paint big, really big, how big?
Nice. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to take the work that you did on Saturday and kind of use that to start your painting on canvas that's about 6 feet by 6 feet tall. And so basically what happens is you get warmed up, and then you just let it rip on Sunday.
Wow.
It's great.
So how much is this workshop?
It's $250. Sorry, Cynthia.
No, it's $250. And that basically, I figured, I if I'm lucky, I'll break even. But I'm not necessarily here for that. I'm just here to...
You are an artist, right?
We already had this discussion. Yeah, although there's no, there's no such thing for me as starving, because you can look at me right now. I'm pretty healthy. But, there's something about putting a first stroke of paint on a canvas that that is beyond words. And there's something about the creative urge that people have. We were just talking about this, too, that's really important for people to experience.
And is this for, people who know what they're doing?
Zero. No, it's from Yale to jail.
Oh, okay.
We take, anybody. You don't have to have any talent or experience to discover this kind of, what I call it is personal visual vocabulary that you already have.
Well, that sounds exciting. So how do people sign up? Are there any spots left?
Yes, there are. We have a few more spots left. Tickets are at the Jack. Hearthside Books are online at jack.org.
Okay. And it starts tomorrow night,
mm-hmm.
5 o'clock.
Right. And we also are doing kind of something fun. We're going to give away one free student pass this Friday night. There's going to be music, and Megan will tell you more about it, but we're also going to have a drawing. So if you're interested and you're a little concerned about the cost, come on down, and you could always just talk to me about your situation, too, and we'll see how it works out.
That sounds great. Cynthia, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for being here.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. So, Megan, we're here with our Arts Up, but before we get into the whole lineup, let's talk about how do you get that student pass.
Yes, we're so thrilled to have Cynthia. She emailed us and told us about this class, and we said, yeah, we'd love to help you out, and she's coming to Juno anyway, and so we're hosting it at the Jack. That's where the class is, and at the block party, we'll be giving away one free pass, and the block party starts tomorrow night at 5.
All right.
So you don't have to do anything. You just need to put your name in a little raffle at the front desk at the Jack, and we'll do the drawing around 5:15.
Okay, so let's say somebody's listening and they're not familiar with what the block party is. Can we talk a little about the block party and who's playing tomorrow night?
Of course. Block parties are free. They're open to the public. We've got live music every Friday. We partner with the Slam and the food trucks, and it's sponsored by Holland America and Princess Cruises. And we just try to have a good old time every Friday night, 5 to 7.
What's cooking tomorrow night?
High cost of living. Colette Costa's band will be there.
It's and actually, great. We'll be painting on the big canvases Friday night, getting them primed.
Oh.
So you'll see us cranking it out, preparing our canvases, too.
Excellent.
So it will be fun.
So that sounds great.
Yeah, it'll be a really busy day tomorrow. We're excited about it.
And is it going to be inside?
You know, it's a 90% chance of rain, so sadly I have to make the call right now that it'll be indoors. But we've been opening up the big loading doors, and we put a tent out and a big banner, and it's had a really nice open feel despite the fact we're in the main hall.
Okay, so, cool.
One of these days we'll get sunny weather and we'll move it over to the slant. The
APK. Hope we're not all done. We had our closing in April and May. Okay, you're done. So what else is going on this weekend?
Well, tonight there is a free preview of a new play by Aaron Elmore, Theater in the Rough, Running with Pretty Sharp Things. It's the first free preview, and then opening night for that is tomorrow night.
Cool. New play, well. Written by Aaron?
Written by Aaron himself.
All right.
Go support one of Juno's most favorite playwrights. We've got the Rock Around the Block party, of course, and the Paint Big workshop. And then after that, 7 p.m., Science at the Screen, Science on the Screen, which has a NASA director, Dr. Thomas Edwards. And he'll be talking about technology in NASA. And that is accompanied by a showing of Agora, a film with Rachel Weisz, about a woman astronomer and physicist in the Roman period.
And where is that?
So the talk is at 360.
Right downstairs.
Yep, so you can go to the block party and then run across the street and go to this free talk with this NASA
walk,
scientist.
You
could walk safely in the crosswalk.
I mean, you have it.
Preference.
Seven. It's not like, you know, I think it's just, you know.
Exactly. And then two free previews with Gold Town Theater. So thanks to Gold Town for hosting that. One of them is in the evening on Friday at 9 p.m. And the next one is Monday at... trying to find it. 7 p.m.
Monday at 7. Thanks. And Rachel Weisz, I always thought she was Weiss, but I don't know. But she's one of my, I really like her. Yeah, absolutely. So what else?
Saturday is also Family Day at the City Museum. Oh. That's in the afternoon, 1 to 3. And during Family Day, any adult with a kiddo gets free admission to the city, and they have a free activity that they do. They'll be reading the picture book, A Place Where Sunflowers Grow, and learning how to make origami. So 1 to 3, City Museum, great kid activity. Saturday night we have Glitz, the big drag show. I hear that it's sold out. Maybe get your name on the volunteer list if you're trying to get in. Otherwise, plenty of other Pride events the rest of the month. And check out, Siegel's got a great page on Facebook and a really good website if you want to get in on that. And then, of course, also...
I love a town that has a sold-out show at the Centennial Hall for a drag show.
I love it. I'm so proud of Juno and so happy I live here.
Well, Gigi Monroe has definitely raised the bar and also
has
a lot of friends coming in from out of town. So
yes, she has.
Very exciting.
Then, of course, Todd and friends have the saxophone showcase,
yes,
which you just heard about.
Unbelievable.
Sunday is pretty slow, except for the conclusion of our Paint Big workshop with Cynthia. There's a pickup game of Ultimate Frisbee at 3 p.m. if you're not painting. Mm-hmm. Monday, there's a really cool workshop that runs most of the day called Men Stopping Violence. And that happens at Elizabeth Paratrovich Hall, and it's sponsored by AWARE and the Central Tlingit and Haida Council. So if you're interested in that, please check out awareak.org.
It's a three-day training. It's two different sessions, and you could sign up for one or both. So
excellent.
So if you're interested, you might want to get to the website because registration, you could show up at the door, I bet, but registration is a good idea.
It's helpful for them for planning purposes.
Yeah, they have a lot of people registered. It's great.
And then 7 p.m., like we said, we had a free screening of that film, Agora, at Gold Town, co-presented with the Science on the Screen. And then Tuesday, I have Arts Roundtable at the Jack. That's a meeting that happens monthly. It's open to the public, and we invite artists and arts organizations and other businesses to just come and visit at this large round table, a.k.a. our conference table, and chat about what's going on in the arts and any current issues or projects they have going on. It's a great way for both individuals, organizations, and businesses to connect.
And what time is that?
That's 5 to 7.
At the Jack.
At the Jack. I think we'll be in the main hall that day. Following that, 6 to 7:30, there's a really interesting nonprofit center town hall meeting. That's at Hangar on the Wharf, and it is presented by United Human Services, and it's chatting about a multi-tenant project for the building that was formerly known as the Bill Ray Center.
Interesting.
So all interested social service agencies and community members are encouraged to attend.
Sounds interesting.
Get out there, you nonprofits. And then 7 to 8 p.m., we've got a Treadwell Gold presentation by author Sheila Kelly. And she'll be presenting the history of Treadwell and the people who work there. 6:45 is when the doors open, and Kelly is a descendant of Treadwell himself.
Oh, wow. And where is that?
That is at the Douglas Public Library.
Cool.
And this is presented in conjunction with the new Perseverance Theater play, Treadwell Gold, which opens on June 22nd.
Wow, lots of theater going on in June. That's great.
That concludes our busy week. I'll be back next week to talk about more.
Okay, that sounds great.
Excellent, thank
so,
you.
So, Cynthia, tell us about, we're going back to the artist who will be doing that Paint Big, really big workshop that starts on Friday. We don't have a lot of time, but you're living in Chico, so how many times have you done this workshop?
This is probably the 10th or 12th time.
Right. And Priya, what is the biggest takeaway?
Happiness from myself and from other people. I know it sounds kind of impossible to feel happy with such a daunting thing ahead of yourself, but it's just such an experience. I can't tell you how liberating and how good it feels to just let yourself be coached and to create uncensored. And I'm not talking about just splattering paint. There's content. But everybody likes to be seen. And when you have your artwork up and you've kind of gone beyond the fear of criticism and the fear of wasting paint and the fear of making a mistake and all this good stuff, it's great.
That sounds wonderful. I hate to cut you off, but we have we're at the end of our show.
And you could sell it, too.
We're a live show.
Yeah. No, it's all good.
That sounds great. Well, thank you both for coming in. And, Jeff, thanks for putting together a great show. It was really an excellent show. I had so much fun. So, weather, we're still looking at rain in various forms, showers, rain, scattered, so on and so forth, until Sunday, where it will be partly sunny. You could always tune in to Juno Afternoon online at ktoo.org and listen to it as your pleasure. Tomorrow, Andy Klein will be here, and he'll be chatting with a whole host of people. It's definitely worth a listen. Thanks for sharing your day with us.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 1.